You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Joe Crawford.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 15th, 2016.
People leave, but more people come in, and there's enough interest in printmaking that this place has stayed open. And if it wasn't for that, there would be no Bloomington Print Collective.
On this week's edition of Big Talk, correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Danielle Herschel of the Bloomington Print Collective. That's coming up later in the show. But first, these local headlines.
Bloomington police announced this afternoon that they made an arrest in connection with a rape and burglary that was reported last week. The incident occurred in the early morning hours of Monday, September 5th, at the Knights Landing Apartments on South Walnut Street. A woman told police that a man woke her up in her apartment at 4 a.m., then raped her and stole her cell phone. Police say the man also threatened to kill the victim. Today, police arrested 28-year-old Devin Grounds of Salisbury in the case. Grounds was booked into the Monroe County Jail and charged with rape, burglary, and theft. Police have been clear they don't believe this rape is connected to four other instances that occurred around the same time in which women reported a masked man broke into their homes in the middle of the night. One of those incidents occurred on the same night, however, September 5th, during which the Knights Landing rape was reported. Police statements say the Knights Landing incident occurred at 4 a.m., and the second unrelated incident occurred an hour later on South Henderson Street. The next three incidents involving a masked man were reported in the early morning hours of September 8th. Police have yet to make any arrests in those cases.
In their meeting last night, Bloomington City Council members reviewed nearly $20 million worth of projects to be funded by reissuing some of the city's existing bonds. City Controller Jeff Underwood said he anticipates the actual money requested will be less.
We're asking for a maximum amount of $8.4 million for the Parks Department and $11,950,000 for the city, with a maximum interest rate of 6%. We think that, so that's a slightly over $20 million. We actually think that the total issue will be around $18 million and the interest rate will be around 3%. So we think we'll do much better there.
The list of projects to be funded through the reissued bonds include intersection improvements, sidewalk and trail projects, equipment replacement at various city parks, a bridge project, and a fishing pier for Lake Griffey. Also on the list is a five-year plan to modernize the city's sanitation process. Public Works Director Adam Wason said automating the city's sanitation process and replacing aging sanitation vehicles would prevent injuries and save money.
As I'm sure most of you are aware, we're using a rather outdated model of manual lifting of all the trash and recycling and yard waste currently, where we'll have one driver on a truck and two laborers in the back manually lifting all trash and recycling into the back of the trucks. So three main reasons that we're looking to move towards a more automated system. First and foremost, employee wellness and safety. As I described the system we're currently using, we have high levels of employee injuries, workers' compensation costs to the city, and so that's a number one reason. Number two is we're in need of replacing many of our trucks in the sanitation fleet. We have the age of our fleet is beyond, in many cases, beyond the useful life of our sanitation trucks, and so given the fact that we're in need of replacing these trucks, it only makes sense at this point to staff and others that we would move towards a more automated system with new technologies.
Wason said while a basic plan has been developed, a budget and implementation plan are yet to be fleshed out. In a press conference last month, Mayor Hamilton announced plans for replacing the current trucks with automated vehicles. Use a side-loading truck as an example. Underwood and Wason said exactly what kinds of trucks haven't yet been determined. The cost to customers will also likely change as the city hopes to replace the current sticker system with a rate scheduled based on the amount or weight of trash collected. Wason received considerable pushback from council members about inadequate financial data and specifics about what type and how many trucks will be purchased. Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith said her constituents have expressed concerns about the proposed changes, but she couldn't respond because council members were not included in the process.
I feel like the council has not been sufficiently involved in the planning for changes in our sanitation pickup delivery, our sanitation system changes that have been proposed. The mayor obviously has a vision of how he wants to modernize this part of our city services. But as the controller said, the city council needs to be consulted for several parts of this this project, not just the bonding, but how it's described in our municipal code, how the price structure will work, et cetera. And that indicates to me that the city council really should have been more involved in decisions that seem to have already been made up to this point. I keep hearing, well, there's going to be more public input, but certain announcements have been made. Certain decisions have clearly been made.
Councilmember Allison Chopra agreed, saying she recently found herself in the same situation. Underwood said renewing the bonds will not trigger any increase in taxes.
The Monroe County Council gave its approval for the county to borrow $2 million for a variety of countywide projects. In the council's meeting on Tuesday, County Attorney Jeff Cockrell said the county was in a good position to take on a new bond since the bond on the showers building will be paid off early next year.
This would stabilize the tax rate for next year so that it would not see any increase or decrease, and it would also stabilize maybe from an investment purpose in investing in our capital needs. And so this is a capital bond. The ordinance in front of you is for a bond not to exceed $2 million to be paid back over 2 years. Again, that's a change from what we typically had in the past.
Cockerell reviewed the list of projects to be funded with the bond money.
The project lists are a trails project, essentially from Ellettsville to Woodyard Road, approximately $470,000 for that. Property acquisition, we're looking right now at two different possibilities. One is about 54 acres by the airport. The other is we call it the Dillman property. It was purchased by our Parks Foundation as part of the trail project on the south side of the county. We got $75,000 in vehicle purchases. The health building looks like it may need a new roof, or it does need a new roof for $128,000. Body scanners for the jail, which would be $147,000. The drain flush for the Charlotte T. Zitlow Justice Building, which is approximately $80,000. Some work at the Johnson Hardware Building, including putting a new deck where the clients enter, and also a sewer line for approximately $200,000 for both of those projects.
Cockerell went on to list the need for heating and air conditioning work in various government buildings, fiber upgrades in the showers building, and meeting space upgrades. Also listed, an expansion of the Youth Services Bureau, which would include removing the house located at the front of that property. Councilmember Marty Hawk questioned whether a new bond was really needed.
From which numbers did you look at to help us arrive that we simply do not have the money, considering that we do have additional money in the rainy day fund, that we're moving money, more money into the rainy day fund? It seems obvious that indeed we do have the cash to do this without borrowing to do it, and at what point do we believe it's the right thing to do to go to the taxpayer and ask them for additional money and sign off on this saying we don't have the money when indeed we do.
Cockerell said he had reviewed the rainy day fund as well as the general fund and the cumulative capital fund and saw, quote, the commitments and balances are significantly lower than they used to be, unquote. Hawk said she wasn't in favor of spending down all of the county's savings, but she noted that finding uses for bond money is always easy. She expressed concern for the taxpayers.
The city's doing some huge bond issues, and the same taxpayer will be paying the taxes for those bonds as we'll be paying taxes for these bonds, the ones who live in the city.
Commissioner Jeff McKim confirmed that much of the rainy day and general funds had already been spent.
This council has spent down, intentionally spent down, this council has spent down, intentionally spent down a lot of our cash reserves on some important capital projects in the past, to the point where they're much lower than they used to be. We spent significantly out of the general fund for furniture for the courthouse. We spent significantly out of rainy day for an election and for the dispatch center. So I'm in a mode where I think we need to be building up the rainy day fund for operational reserves, not in a position to be further expending it for capital.
Hawk said she would rather see a plan that used existing money to draw matching dollars to, quote, get more bang for our buck, unquote. She acknowledged that the county's budget does not include capital projects.
The request of our normal budget, that when we go through the budget process, has very little in it that covers these capital projects. We can't compare the two, because what we're talking about with these capital projects, which, by the way, I support in making sure we take care of our buildings. You know, I normally sign off on these. But at some point in time, you have to look to see, can we sincerely look at our numbers and say this with honesty? Because what we're covering here is capital items. You're not allowed to cover the operational costs with a bond issue. So there's the difference. It's the one-time kind of purchase or expense that we can pay for in these capital item situations. And if this is the highest and best use for the money, and we can say to the public, we need to do this because we have planned out, we have a scheduled plan of what we want to do with the money, other dollars we have on hand, then I think we can do that with honesty. That's what I want to see.
The council went on to give its approval in a vote of 5-2, with Hawk and Councilmember Shelley Yoder casting the two no votes. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. The Bloomington Print Collective is a center for print artists to share tools and expertise, and for the public to get fine art printing done, or even t-shirts, silkscreen. Co-founder Danielle Urschel joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk. Danielle discovered Bloomington as a teenager, taking road trips down this way from northern Indiana with friends. She fell in love with the city and the university and decided to stay here after earning her advanced fine arts degree. Danielle talks about the collective as well as the print arts in general. She'll even explain what Intaglio is.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here, and my guest today is Danielle Urschel. She's the big boss at Bloomington Print Collective. But I bet she says I'm not the big boss.
I'm not the big boss, Mike.
But someone's got to be.
It's controlled chaos.
First, let's try to figure out what in the heck the Bloomington Print Collective is.
Okay. Well, the Print Collective is a Bloomington printmaking shop. Printmaking as in screen printing, lithography, intaglio, relief printing.
Intaglio.
Intaglio printing.
That sounds like a Renaissance word.
It's etching and engraving.
That is.
As in, come up to my room and see my etchings.
Uh-huh.
That's where you've heard of it.
Now, when you say screening, that means actually put a design on cloth or something? That would be...
Right. So screen printing is used for printing t-shirts, but traditionally in the art field, it's used also for printing on paper, which is also called serigraphy, which means more of a fine arts screen printing.
But so you do both?
Yep, we do both.
So how long has this outfit been in existence?
Well, we first came together in 2011, myself and some other printmakers. The thing about printmaking is when you, like, I had finished my master's degree here, and one of the other members had just finished their BFA, And like when you're a painter, maybe you just need some paintbrushes and some canvas. But at IU, they have this great facility, and then you graduate from there, and now you're kind of in your basement trying to expose screens with a light bulb and trying to print with spoons. So a lot of printmakers came together, and we said, hey, what if we just take all of our equipment, all of our know-how, all of our sweat, and build a place that we can all share? I had just gotten gotten an Indiana Arts Council grant for a relief press, and some other people had letterpress equipment. I had already set up a screen printing workshop at Rhino's for like no money, really, just out of junk. And so we, Luke Woodeman and myself and Izzy Jarvis and some other printmakers came together in the space that had been Paper Crane, and that was 2010. It's actually an old warehouse building. So we jumped on it, and the way it works is we have members, and we all share the rent, and we share upkeep, and we share equipment, and we all take out the trash. The lease is in my name, so somehow I'm a little more in charge, because at the end of the month, I'm the one who has to make sure we have the money. Our original model was that we had actually 7 members at that point to share rent, and each of them paid a certain amount of money, and they also had to volunteer. So twice a week we had open print, where any community member could come in and learn printmaking for $5 an hour, which is a pretty good price. And then we did that for about 3 years, and in this economy and in Bloomington, that just wasn't sustainable. Also, in Bloomington, people leave. It's a Gilligan's Island. People leave, they come back, they leave, they might be gone for 12 years. So of the original 7, there are 2 of us still here. So we have 2 of the original members, and then we have 3 additional new members.
Is this how it worked? Say Danielle owned a machine, some kind of expensive machine.
Right.
Then when on open print day or whenever you could do it, could anybody come and use Danielle's machine?
Absolutely. Yep. That's how we do it. We share.
Uh-huh. And does Danielle then have to give permission each time?
No.
Or is it just assumed?
It's just assumed. At this point, we're not so heavy on the education part.
Yeah.
We're more heavy on the here's a space to use.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we have enough paying monthly members, we've, you know, skin of our teeth, we've been here 5 years. We're located at 401 West 6th Street, and we're in the Photo Solution Building.
Uh-huh.
The easiest way to get a hold of us is to go to our Facebook page, mm-hmm. Bloomington Print Collective. My personal email is there. And I'm, even though it's a collective, I'm the one who mostly deals with people. What we're actually at this point really looking for is another member. It's mm-hmm. $150 a month for total access.
Mm-hmm.
And that also means that you don't have to volunteer, but you have to help with the space set up.
Yeah, sweep up a little.
Right, because we're down to 4 members, and 5 members is what we need to hit our rent. And then all the $5 an hour people is just to pay for extra stuff, like paper towels.
How did you get into this printing racket from the get-go?
Well, gosh, let's see. My first printmaking I ever did was in high school. And I printed a bunch of anti-Ronald Reagan t-shirts in my basement. And I lived up by Chicago.
In your basement?
In my basement.
Well,
I was in like 10th grade.
And okay.
We had this amazing fine arts department in Valparaiso, where I went to school.
Okay.
Not a great town. Great fine arts department. And they taught screen printing in 10th grade. So I got into it in high school. And then in the summers, I'd go to the Art Institute for classes, and they had a great print shop there. They had amazing printmaking department there. And then when I moved to Bloomington, I got my BFA in fine arts, majoring in printmaking. And then I went on to get my master's degree in fine arts. Very interesting people in the printmaking departments, I would say. Very unusual people.
Why? How?
Who are really passionate about mark making. And you get around a bunch of printmakers. And because I think paint, like graphic design, definitely attracts certain people who are willing to precision.
Mm-hmm.
If it's letterpress, hey, no spell check here. You got to know how to spell things.
Yeah.
Your letterpress is very precise. Painting is a different people than printmaking. And I think printmaking encompasses so many different things. It's drawing. It can be graphic design. It's between all the processes, there's a huge world of things that you will never learn all of those things.
Obviously, you had the desire as a young lady to do something creative. Mm-hmm. You could have picked up a brush and dabbed some oil on a canvas.
Right.
You could have drawn pictures with charcoal.
Right.
You decided to go into this field that costs a lot of money to get stuff.
Well, I did all those in undergraduate here. You have to take painting, sculpture, 3D, 2D. And I did a lot of painting. I did sculpture. I did ceramics. Printmaking is hard, but it's the thing you stay up till 2 in the morning doing. It's the thing you get up early to do. There are some things you do and you can really appreciate other people doing them, like painting. I love looking at paintings. I'm a horrible painter. It does not work for me.
Right.
And it's not the kind of thing I'm so passionate about that I'll like skip a meal to do it. Like I was at the print shop this morning carving with another printmaker. You know, I kind of forgot to have lunch before I came here because we were so... Now, if I was painting, I would have stopped for lunch. And the other awesome thing about printmaking, which is not true of painting, there's always something magic that happens. Let's say you're doing a lithograph, which is using greasy mark on a stone. Mm-hmm. Well, so you're going to draw it. So now you're drawing. Okay. So now you're going to etch it, and now you're going to roll it up. You have control, but you don't have complete control. So something's going to happen, something that's going to change your drawing into something else. And I think that's the exciting thing for me.
Yeah.
Also, like, I'm doing a relief print, and I know what it looks like while I'm carving it, but when I ink it up and print it, there's going to be something that happened. There's a transformation from the drawing I put on to what I'm printing. And that's very exciting, because it can be a good change or bad change. And if you learn to control the medium, then you have more control over what's going to happen, but you still don't have total control.
So you depend on the luck of the draw and what the universe wants.
And you just take, you go with what you have. And then I was working with someone today and they said the S word, which is sometimes a good sign. That means that they did something they didn't mean to do. So instead of looking at it and saying, well, you screwed that up, you look at it and you say, okay, well, now we have to think of this in a different way. Huh. How can we use that as a positive?
Now, you mentioned Valparaiso.
Yeah.
That's where you were born and raised?
Mm-hmm.
So you stayed in Valparaiso for how long?
18 years.
Okay.
I then
came to IU.
Right. I had friends who had... I was considering going to the Art Institute, which is a big city.
Oh, yeah.
And I had friends during high school who would drive down to Bloomington.
Yeah.
And we would just drive around at night, you know, evening, listen for music, get out of the car. There was a house show. And that's how we found the Bloomington scene was just coming down for house shows. And then I thought, I'm moving there. And
there's where I want to be.
And I've never left. Printmaking department, IU, is a really great department. But what do you do if you want to live here after that?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you've studied printmaking in undergrad, so you've got another degree, where are you going to go? In your basement with a spoon to print? So, you know, having decided to actually live here, that's the reason we've been here 5 years, I think, is because in Bloomington there's enough, like I said, people leave, but more people come in, and there's enough interest in printmaking that this place has stayed open. And if it wasn't for that, there would be no Bloomington Print Collective. And it's the energy people bring in, not just their supplies or their equipment, but their energy and their passion for printmaking and having a little community of printmakers. And it kind of helps keep it alive.
That was the co-founder of the Bloomington Print Collective, Danielle Urschel, speaking with WFHB's Michael Glab. You can hear all episodes of Big Talk at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197. You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by myself, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.